gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And especially you, fat, sweaty wrestling fans. This bout has a 30-minute time limit.
This contest is set for one fall.
Seriously, why even say one fall? It's always one fall.
Oh, you didn't know?
Welcome to Shoot Radio, the only pro wrestling show that threatens its fans with figure five leg locks, triple axe handles, and large packages. Wait, what?
Woo, woo, woo! You know it!
Let's move on. Now introducing the tag team champions from the not-so-mean streets of suburban Toronto. This is The Chris and his partner. And yes, I mean partner like that. From the well-landscaped subdivisions of suburban Chicago, it's Johnny P. Get ready, wrestling fans, to sit through this utterly ridiculous gimmick match known simply as Shoot Radio.
Back, episode 3 of Shoot Radio. And I got the episode number right this time.
This is Shoot Radio. This is episode 3. And this episode, we're going to be covering what? What are we going to cover in this episode? We already covered managers. We already covered finishing moves. What else is there to talk about?
Yeah, oh, wait. Hold on. We might as well just end it here.
Yeah, wait a minute. There's like a billion things to talk about. But what is this subject?
Well, this one might get a little hot. Not in the Miss Elizabeth and Granny Panty sense, but
Mae Young.
It's something that we've talked about offline, and we know we're on opposite sides of the spectrum. We're talking about something that's been in wrestling for a long time, the authority figure. So, you know, kind of like the general manager or the commissioner, sort of the on-screen personality that somehow has authority over everybody within the promotion.
Whatever title or fake title you want to give them, in some cases, real title and fake title, or sometimes they've got a fake title on TV. Like what was Gorilla Monsoon was the commissioner for a while.
No, right? He was the president.
Oh, president for a while, you know, but.
Which is part of what I have a problem with. It's like, what is the hierarchy? And first of all, like, okay, it's pretty well known that like wrestling had problems with athletic commissions. Why do they have a commissioner? Like, what commission is being upheld?
You know, commissioner, it's like, it's pretty funny because people use that term for everything. You know, if you're like a fantasy football league, like, oh, it's our commissioner. Like, that's just the catch-all, I think, sports-related authority figure for everything.
Yeah, I understand why they use the word, but, you know, I'm a nitpicker when it comes to that kind of thing.
Well, we talked about being on opposite ends of this. I think I could sum up my stance with two words. You're fired. You like that?
That was good. You got the good. You got the good phlegm going.
Yeah, Austin, you're fired.
Got a very well developed uvula.
Thanks. I think is that a girl part? Well, whatever. But yeah, Vince McMahon, the ultimate authority figure. There is no better authority figure in the history of professional wrestling, in my opinion, because, as it's well known, he is the CEO, chairman, god of wrestling, promotional-wise. And on screen, he's the authority figure. So when Vince was in that role, I loved it. I thought the idea of authority figures could get no better than that. Even though I wasn't even a huge Austin fan. I was not even really that big of a Stone Cold fan. I thought it was kind of, you know, some hokey kind of things that happened. But I was a big fan of what that feud was all about and what it was trying to do, given the idea of you got Austin rebelling against his boss, who wouldn't want to rebel against their boss. You got Vince, who is the real life boss and the on-screen boss. I just thought it was perfect.
See, I would agree definitely that Vince McMahon is probably one of the, and I'm talking about the on-screen Mr. McMahon, I guess I'll say. I would definitely agree. He's one of the great wrestling characters. But that whole Austin McMahon feud, like when you really think about it, even within a wrestling context, it just made no sense. And this is one of the big problems I have with the authority figure, because even though, you know, Austin is the anti-hero, everyman, ass kicker kind of thing against the evil corporate tyrant, even though that's a good story, having Vince McMahon poised as the authority figure, just to me, that's where it breaks down, because I just couldn't help, even as it was happening, couldn't help but think, okay, why does Vince McMahon need to create all these convoluted scenarios to entrap Austin? Like, why doesn't he just fire him?
Well, okay. So now you are removing the suspension of disbelief of professional wrestling for this one.
No, I'm saying that that can't, I could not suspend my disbelief because it was so implausible.
Okay, and I mean, should I go down the list of things in wrestling that are also implausible?
But it was, but implausible in the sense that it's internally inconsistent. Because I mean,
is Mark Henry actually made out of sexual chocolate? No, he's not.
That's a question better answered by China.
What? I mean, it's just, were they together? I don't remember.
They had a storyline.
Did they? Okay, but it's like. It's funny because you're taking one aspect of professional wrestling, the idea of, well, why doesn't he just fire him? I mean, if it's his boss, just fire him. What do you have to put up with this stuff for? Well, what does anybody have to do?
What was the catchphrase you led in with? What was the catchphrase you led in with?
You're fired.
Aha.
Okay.
So
how about the catchphrase, I'm going to kick your ass, that every wrestler says? Are they actually kicking someone's ass? No.
A lot of the time they are.
Well, some people are, you know. Ahmed Johnson is kicking people's ass, yes. But, you know, they're performing a choreographed, you know, wrestling match. And they're not kicking anyone's ass. So I get what you're saying about why isn't just fire them. But I think it should be treated like with all aspects of pro wrestling. This is part of the show. Who would not want to, you know, see that rebellious, you know, every man kind of like attitude of I'm for the people and I'm gonna hit my boss with a bedpan because you can't do it at your job.
And again, I can understand that, but at the same time, like having Vince, you know, I think you could have done the same feud with the same sort of, you know, working class rage storyline without having Vince McMahon poised on screen. Even though it would have been hard to do at the time because, you know, the curtain had already been peeled back. But I think you could have done, even if it might not have been with Vince McMahon, and you can argue, okay, it might not have been as good, but you could have done the same story with Austin rebelling against authority without it being against sort of the titular head of the company. Yeah, I said titular.
You tithead. You know, so go back to...
Let me contrast it with, you know... And again, I don't want to sound like I'm saying that the 80s were the be-all, end-all, but just to sort of contrast. Back in the 80s, you had, in the WWF, you had who as the authority figure?
Well, Jack Tunney was the...
Jack Tunney.
But he wasn't that type of a...
But he was.
He didn't come out and get into feuds with people and stuff like that.
Exactly. But you know what the good thing about that was? You see, when Vince McMahon was the on-screen... authority figure. He was out there every single week, and as great as the promos that he cut and the interaction and the chemistry that he had with Austin or whatever, you know, by the time it had happened, and you know, you can say this a lot about what happened in that time period, but you know, it was almost, you know, too much was too much. By the 8th or 9th time you'd seen Austin give Vince McMahon a stunner, it really didn't mean anything anymore. Whereas back in the 80s, like, the thing I like looking back about Jack Tunney, when that guy was on screen, I mean, he was a total corporate dork. Like, he looked like a guy who was the president of a company. And when he came out and, you know, furthermore, you know, and did his...
That's awesome. Furthermore, there have been 2 Earl Hebners in the ring.
There was a night of chicanery. Right. But, you know, when you saw him on screen, you know, in... you know, my Mark mindset, you thought, okay, this is where shit gets real, because Jack Tunney has had to come down out of his corporate edifice and, you know, dirty the soles of his feet in an arena to address the gravity of this situation.
See, I'm not going to like switch over by any means but I definitely see the merit of your side of that. The idea of, this is not only just the authority figure, but the perception that a real authority figure, the guy that, no, he's not going to get, you know, a finisher done to him by Hulk Hogan or you know, somebody it's not going to happen, because this guy is the boss. And if you want to stick with the ultimates in, you know, kind of sticking with the storyline, you can't do anything to your boss. Like, that doesn't happen. So, I can kind of see where you're coming from. But let me throw this at you, though. So go to that era of the Vince Austin feud And oh, and real quick. So earlier I mentioned I wasn't even a big fan of Austin. You touched on something about how many times can you see McMahon get a stunner done to him? You know what? Maybe that had a big impact on why I was not a big Austin fan. It could be. I mean, if you think about it, the guy was a face, but did heel things. That's a character style that I like. I would normally go for that kind of, you know, wrestler to be a fan of, but I wasn't so much. So maybe you're onto something there with that, but I don't want to give you too much credit. But,
and that also, but, that also goes, I mean, you could critique the whole, you know, I mean, both WWF and WCW kind of, you know, in those years, as great as it was and as, you know, significant appeared as it was, I mean, to a large extent, they kind of like collectively blew their wad, and you know, there was very little places you could go after it because you'd seen everything.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I guess my thought was, so if you go to that era, what is it, 98, 99, I guess. I mean, it continued on with Vince and whoever, Sean and Triple H, whatever. But let's just go to Austin or McMahon.
Slaughter.
Oh yeah. Oh, by the way, I was going to mention this earlier. You said, what's the hierarchy? Where the hell does Sergeant fit into that shit? That's what I want to know. I mean, is it commissioner? Is it president, commissioner, sergeant, then GM? Or what? I don't know. But I mean, he's got to pull rank sometime on somebody. So you go to that Austin McMahon era, late 90s. And week in, week out, you have Austin feuding with his boss. Sometimes Austin had the title during that time. Sometimes he didn't, which I say that because there is some relevance there. I like to put Austin McMahon in that era of feuds that go above and beyond the title. So you've seen in other eras where, you know, Cena and The Rock, for example. Okay. They're not going to have the title, but their match is still going to take precedence, be the main event. Austin McMahon was in a similar kind of vein because they were elevated to that. So regardless if he had the title or not, it was a big deal. So taking that as what it is, being a big deal, being a virtually given that every Raw would end at, you know, 10:03 at night with Austin giving him a stunner, and then cuts into an episode of Burn Notice or something. But
10:03, you're so central.
I know. Sorry. As soon as I said that, I was like, shit, I just alienated most of our audience. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
You know, Eastern's the only time zone that matters, right?
What, Canada has Eastern?
Yeah.
But you guys are north. You guys are in. You're north.
Yeah, we're all on Northern time.
I thought you were on Northern time. I thought you were on beer time, actually.
Yeah, I wish.
I know, me too. Anyway, okay, I got to get this thought out because I've been babbling. Austin McMahon, huge deal at its time. Take McMahon out of the picture. Like you said, he's the real life boss. I'm not going to believe that this guy's going to put up with this shit. Why don't we put somebody else in that spot as the authority figure? Somebody else that say, call him a GM, call him a commissioner, whatever. Why don't you throw Jim Ross in there, for example? Or why don't you throw fucking Michael Hayes in there? Yeah, I swore, because it's Michael Hayes, because he sucks. And put one of those guys in that authority role. Now, Austin and that person are battling back and forth. Is it as big of a deal? Probably not.
No, and, you know, I'd have to concede that point as well. But I think you could have, storyline-wise, you could have kept Vince McMahon as, you know, Austin's antagonist, but just have him in a role like even kind of harkening back to our first episode, like, you know, have him as just, you know, come in as somebody that's like, you know, managing a stable of heel wrestlers or something like that, to say, like, you could have McMahon come in, well, I'm sick and tired and seeing what my company's become, so I'm just gonna manage some wrestlers. I'm gonna show you that, you know, we're better than this Austin creep, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it still goes against your idea of, let's try to keep it real, I guess you could say, you know, where it's, you have the, you know, why don't you just fire him? Like, why would McMahon go to the trouble to make a stable of the top five heels? We just say, you know what, Austin, you actually are fired. Not on camera, behind the scenes, you're fired. You know, that could still happen. It's
kind of like the cat was almost out of the bag, in the sense that, you know, several years prior, because, you know, for the longest time, I mean, when I was watching in the 80s, I mean, to me, Vince was an announcer. Like, you know, I had no real idea that he was the actual head of the company. But, you know, then in the late, you know, like, I think 96 or 97, they actually sort of let it out of the bag on screen.
Yeah, Vince, you know, it's funny.
So, you know, that at that point, it's almost like, you know, you can't put toothpaste back in the tube.
Right. Vince's toothpaste. That's good. I like that. Titan paste. But, you know, it's funny. I remember when I was a kid and so Vince and Jesse would be commentating, which, by the way, love Ventura, big fan. That's another episode for sure. I remember my dad telling, like, we watched the Saturday Night's Main Event and my dad would be like, you know, Vince is actually the boss. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah. Cause you know,
he'd read spoilers.
I know. Totally. Thanks, Dad. You know, it was like he'd read some article or whatever in like the business section of the paper that would talk about, you know, Titan Sports president. And I don't know why I use that voice for a newspaper, but whatever. This newspaper voice. And I was thinking like, what do you mean? He's an announcer. I was like, he's not in charge. I'm like, Jack Tunney's in charge. And it's like, no, that guy's an actor. And I was like, what? You know, like, thanks, Dad. What about Santa Claus and Easter Bunny too? You know, but, you know, at the time, though, yeah, Vince was an announcer, and I think it actually went all the way up into I'd say, like you said, 96 probably. And I got to wonder, not to get too off topic, but was there anything on screen that you could recall? I'm sure we can look it up, but I don't want to. I'd rather just talk about it. And was there any, like, moment where Vince was like, okay, just so everyone knows, I'm more than the commentator, so everybody shut the hell up. You know, like, was there actually a moment, or did he just go away for a while and then come back as the boss?
There was a monologue that he did kind of when they officially started the Attitude Era, and if I'm not mistaken, you know, they went from the, you know, chrome 80s WWF logo to the scratchy one, sort of all in one night. And I think right before the show, Vince McMahon gave this monologue to the audience. Like, it wasn't in the ring or anything, but he was just basically saying, the line I specifically remember him saying was, you know, we at the WWF know that you fans are tired of having your intelligence insulted. And okay, he may not have come right out and said, like, I'm the boss, but I mean, it was pretty clear.
That moment was kind of the curtain lifting kind of moment.
Yeah.
Huh. What was that? Was that before or after, like, the Austin 316 stuff, like the Jake the Snake and all that?
I want to say before, but not way before.
Okay. Because, I mean, I don't remember the exact moment like you do. I might have to look that up, but just as a fun kind of refresher. Because, I mean, it was really a quick, I don't know what you want to call it, downward spiral. It's not the right term, but, you know, right afterwards, it's like, all right.
They took the Band-Aid off in a hurry. Like, I mean,
you take the Band-Aid off, and then all of a sudden, it's like the Montreal screw job. You got this, you got that. It's like, it seemed like everything happened very quick. You know, you look at it now.
Like, you had, you know, it was practically like, you know, you had TL Hopper 1 week, and then you had Austin 316 the next. I mean, it was almost that quick.
It was, yeah, and like, if you think about it, like, when people like always talk about, oh, the Attitude Era, and it was only like 3 years long, whereas what the hell has this era in the 2000s been? Or what you know, like, we people always talk about that, and they talk about the, I don't know, what do they call the 80s? They don't call the Golden Era, do they? What do they call the 80s era?
The Expansion Era.
Oh, is that what they, okay. But it's like, it's kind of funny, they reference back to Attitude Era. It was only a couple years because it came about very quick. You know, if you look at like someone like The Rock, and I know we're going off, so I'll keep it quick. But someone like The Rock, you know, he went from, all right, babyface, oh, he's going to be heel, IC champ, world champ, bam, 1 year. Like, you know, the fast track, you know, college program. You know, it was like, it was so quick. And it's kind of funny because, you know, a lot of stuff happened at that time. We look back at that. But, you know, going back to Vince as in that role, you know, like I was saying, it seems like that was the best they at any wrestling organization could do. The idea of the actual chairman of the board battling the top guy. Like, it just seems like, you know, yeah, it happened maybe every week. It's like, oh, what's he going to do now? Like, wouldn't you just fire the guy once he took the Zamboni for a spin, you know? But I don't think he could do any better than that. So, I mean, we could probably touch more on how we feel about maybe some other authority figures on that. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, one that I thought was, and I guess a macro sense, because there was a lot of crap interspersed, but, you know, one, looking back, authority figure that I thought they did a pretty good job of, at least in the way that he was positioned on screen, was Eric Bischoff as the leader of the NWO. Because they, on screen, basically said, okay, this is a separate rogue organization. And it was, I mean, it's wrestling, so, you know, you got to have a short memory. But, I mean, they had it fairly well delineated that, you know, he was the head of this sort of splinter organization. And, you know, his authority kind of stopped and started.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, and I didn't watch, admittedly, you know, I think I've talked about, I didn't watch a ton of WCW, but obviously I know of, you know, Eric Bischoff and the NWO and all that. But let me ask you this question, because this kind of relates to that. Because it's Turner Sports, and obviously, you know, Ted never came out and, you know, got a diamond cutter or whatever.
That would have been awesome.
The equivalent, so, you know, and, or I should say like a, I don't know, a Kevin Nash boot or whatever. But was there any, I don't know why this is in my head, but was there something like Bischoff is in charge because he's related to Ted Turner or no? Is that, am I making that up?
I don't recall that.
Okay. I don't, again, I might be just, I didn't watch a ton of it, but I thought maybe it was somebody was just telling me back then, but I thought the idea was to try to justify who this guy is. And it became, you know, that's why he's the boss. So it helped in that kind of believability, much like in WWF when it's like, well, why do I have to listen to Shane McMahon? He's not the authority figure. Oh, he's the boss's kid. Shit. Okay. Yeah. I got to listen to him. You know, I thought it was that same kind of things, but, regardless of that happened,
I thought it was the dance he did.
That was actually part of it. Oh, I saw a YouTube video the other day of Triple H doing an impression of that dance off camera, by the way. It was like right after Shane came out, he did the little whatever. The
stutter the step dealy.
Yeah, the hand motion and all. Yeah, whatever. It's kind of funny. But yeah, so Bischoff as, you know, the guy, you know, the corporate guy in NWO was pretty cool. I agree with that. As cool as WCW could be. Let's just say that.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's always easy to look back because, I mean, that's going on, you know, 15 years ago. I mean, it's easy to look back and think how cheesy it was. But, you know, at the time, that was, like, they were beating WWF in the ratings. Like, people were into it in a big way.
Well, let me ask you this, because it sounds like you're a bit defensive in that. I wasn't a WCW fan back then, and I'm not now. So it's not like I'm looking back and saying, oh, that was cheesy. It's like, no. Back then I said, this is dumb. Now I say it's cheesy, you know, but it's like, were you a like a hardcore WCW fan back then into this or no?
It was more the case that, just to give a bit of history, like I watched wrestling regularly up until about WrestleMania 6, which is when I was in my last year of high school. And just when I went away to university, I was either, you know, we either didn't have cable or, you know, I was the only wrestling fan and I was in the closet about it. So I barely watched it all until I got my own apartment after I graduated in 97. So I picked up wrestling again in late 97. So
okay.
WCW had a lot of the guys that I was most familiar with. You know, it had Bret Hart, it had Hulk Hogan, it had Lex Luger, it had all these guys that were, you know, the main eventers to me, you know, 6+ years earlier. Now, you know, there's the obvious limitations that go along with it, but I had more of a connection with them because that's who I knew. And
okay. And
as I got, you know, I watched both Raw and Nitro, and I just enjoyed, you know, the back and forth between the two companies and how guys would come in.
Okay. And that's totally fair. And I don't mean to be, I'm not knocking you by any means. It was just, I was just curious because I don't think we've had the talk. Right. You know, for me, I've watched on and off just throughout
on a very special shoot radio.
On a very special, yeah, right. Chris comes out of the WCW closet. We should have an episode on that because I got a couple funny stories about, but basically there was me and my buddies at that time, we had this little certificate. It was said owner of WCW, and we used to like give it to each other, but like in secret ways, but you couldn't repeat it. Like I'd give a friend, hey, check out the CD. This band's really cool. He'd open up the CD case and it's like, the deed to the company would be in there. And nobody could do that. So the next time I'd be like, hey, it's like, I got some leftover pizza in there. Open the pizza box. Oh shit. It's like, yep, you're the owner. You own it. Like,
that's funny.
That's how much, and it sounds so bad, but like, that's how much we would make fun of it and not like it. Just cause, you know, from our perspective though, we were always WWF fans, myself growing up and, you know, throughout the years. And I didn't really take a break. Now there were times I didn't watch it as much, you know, like there's every now and then I'll see a picture from somebody from like 2004 and I'd be like, who is that? Because maybe I wasn't watching it as much, you know, whatever. Maybe it's, you know, work or family, whatever the case was. But there wasn't really a long period of time. So for me, it was always just WWF. That's just kind of what I watched, you know, and it's kind of what I was, you know, been into with that. So, yeah, I forgot where this was going, but.
It's kind of a meandering WCW Eric Bischoff conversation.
Oh, okay. So Bischoff, yeah.
So apart from Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff, like what other authority, because you were a very strong proponent of the authority figure. What other authority figure have you seen that's been implemented well? Or have there been ones that you thought, okay, this is stupid, this makes no sense, I can't get into this?
Well, as an ECW fan, I obviously Paul Heyman as an authority figure is great because as everybody knows that watched ECW, you know, it was Paul's, you know, blood, sweat, and tears in the organization. So it's not even the case of, the CEO of the corporation is here. Oh, shit. It's, no, the guy who basically isn't paying everyone. He's living off his mom's credit cards, you know. Talk about an authority figure. It's like, well, this guy's pretty serious. So I got to tell you, every time Paul came out and talked, I was, you know, I marked out for him every single time and took everything he was saying as, you know, as fact, because that was Paul Heyman. It's like, this isn't a character. So I think if you want to count that, that's one that definitely worked for me.
Yeah. I really liked, you know, from what I saw, cause it was harder to get up here, but, the thing with ECW is, I mean, there was always sort of like an underground, edgy, like almost like Manson family vibe to it.
Yeah.
So seeing a guy like Heyman come out as the authority figure, I mean, to me, you know, that was believable. It's like, okay, I can believe that this, you know, short, fat, but oddly charismatic guy is, you know, somehow, you know, keeping New Jack from murdering Louis Spicoli. You know, like
awesome references too.
But you know, I could believe it because, you know, ECW was about, you know, very intentionally being different than what you saw on Monday nights from 8 to 10.
Very true. It was, well, we'll get into I definitely want to do an ECW episode because I want to talk about FanFest where I met a bunch of the wrestlers there. And it was pretty interesting. But yeah, so obviously Paul Heyman for those reasons. And also, I personally think anytime you involve a member of the McMahon family, it works for me. I don't care if it's Triple H, Stephanie,
even Linda.
Shane. Yeah.
Oh, remember when she, my gosh.
Remember she was like in the wheelchair. Was she like comatose or something? And like Vince is making out with like Trish Stratus right in front of her. Or was it Trish or was it Sable or I forgot who, but, or was it?
It was Trish.
Was it Trish? Yeah. Right in front of her. It's just like, oh my God, this is so wrong. You know? But I give her a lot of credit because it's like, how do you put up with that fucking weird ass family, you know? And she did. And she, you know, now granted, Linda wasn't great on screen.
I see a lot of similarities between Linda and Jack Tunney, because when Linda came out, even though, you know, they're into having everybody at the arena now, like just because of like the cadence of her delivery and like she wasn't cutting promos or using catchphrases, to me, seeing somebody like Linda is like, okay, I can believe that this is somebody that in her day-to-day job, she's running the business of a wrestling, of a national company like the WWE or WWE.
Because she didn't act like a personality.
Yeah.
She didn't act like a superstar.
She came out in a business suit and, you know, talked like somebody that, you know, wasn't trying to get over.
Hey, Vince came out in a business suit. Just, there wasn't a tie and not all the buttons were buttoned, but he came out in a suit.
Well, okay.
With the Vince swagger, yeah. You know?
But that's the thing. That's what blows it for me.
Okay, I could see that. Do you think about
great character? But just it's like, come on, like who would like? Okay, if Vince McMahon was really like that as the boss, like why would anyone come and work there? Like I can understand people working for Jack Tunney or Linda McMahon, but like, who would even get through the interview with Mr. McMahon as the boss?
Well, it kind of reminds me. I remember, I think it was in the first Jericho book where he talks about going to his house to hang out and how surreal it was, you know, like meeting your new boss for the first time and hanging out at his house. And you're right. It's kind of like, the guy's nuts, but it's kind of, I mean, it's almost, you have to go with selective disbelief, I guess, of certain things in that. And so on one hand, there's certain things I have issues with this. On the other hand, you have got certain things, you know, as far as, well, this wouldn't happen or why would you just fire him or just quit, you know? So, yeah, well, I get what you're saying.
Because the whole firing thing is because, I mean, that was his catchphrase. I mean, he introduced the whole mechanism. I mean, I can accept a universe that's like, okay, these people work in a workplace where you can go up and punch your boss in the face and, you know, you can get away with it. And, you know, the worst thing that'll happen to you is, you know, you get put into a weird match.
Yeah, you get sent to SmackDown.
Yeah, actually. Or, you know, Shotgun Saturday Night.
But, yeah, totally.
But, you know, he introduced the whole notion of, you know, we're firing people. Like, you're fired. Like, that was his catchphrase. It's like, how can you fire, you know, Funaki because he spilled coffee on you, which I know didn't really happen. But, I mean, that's just the kind of thing that they would do. But, you know.
Wait, you don't think Funaki's ever spilled coffee on Vince in all his years? No, I know, I'm just messing with you.
But, you know, when you introduce that as, and that's something else, you know, that's a broader thing that just bugs me about when, like, the lack of continuity when wrestling introduces plot devices that don't do the same thing. Like, I mean, you know, one of my other favorite examples that, you know, is kind of watered down and gone now. Like, for the longest time, like, I could accept the fact, okay, you could hit a guy with a chair a million times and he'll stand up and get up from it, but you hit him with the belt, you know, that's, you know, that'll put you down for good.
Man, you know what? So why do you even watch wrestling? If you're going to pick apart every single thing that's like, you know, well, this I don't buy. This Bronco Buster hurting somebody? No, thank you. Flip, you know.
No, you're not hearing me, man. It's more.
No, I'm totally hearing you.
No, you're not.
Oh, you're like, oh, the belt wouldn't hurt more than a chair. Yeah, no shit.
No,
guess
that's
what?
Not what Triple I said. That's not Triple what H I said at all. What I said was, they for the longest time, they established that, okay, yeah, the belt puts you down for good, but it's not like that anymore. Sometimes you can see guys hit with the belt and get up right away. It's the lack of consistency that bothers me.
Oh, so you like the belt hurting more than anything else?
It's not like or dislike. It's like I can accept a world where that's the case if that's always the case.
Hmm. Okay. So you want consistency in your fakeness.
Exactly.
Okay. Because as we know, pro wrestling has been consistent, right? There's been, you know, good, bad. There's been offensive, boring, right? Nothing's been consistent, I would say. So I think you're asking for a lot. Because if you're asking
damn
for,
right, and I deserve if
you're,
it.
If you're asking for authority figures to be consistent, you can't. How is something supposed to evolve if you want that, you know? I mean, WWE in the Attitude Era would hit people in the head with chairs. You haven't seen that in a long time, have you? Now it's in the back or leg or something that's not, you know, a direct hit in the head. So, I mean,
well, that's a bit of a different category though. That's dirty pool. I mean,
well, yeah, but you're talking about, you know, you mentioned chair shots, but I get what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. So that one, but the idea of,
don't you try and typify me as a flopper.
I'm going to flop you. I'm going to flop the flop out of you. You flopper. That's a good wrestling gimmick.
You couldn't flop your own mother on the floppiness day of your life if you had an electrified flopping machine.
Flop, yeah, I could. No, I mean, I don't get the whole consistency argument. That makes no sense to me. But I'm going to, you know, because obviously we're not going to see eye to eye on that. But I will keep touching on authority figures in general. And I want to get your opinion on when Raw and SmackDown have the general managers. When did that start? Do you know? Do you remember when that started?
Mid 2000s? I want to say, I think it was a little earlier than that. Like when they first did the draft, I want to say like 2003.
Because wasn't, and again, I know there's people that are listening that are looking, you know, that know this stuff and we don't.
Oh yeah, they're shouting into their iPods. We can't hear, yeah, we can't hear you, so don't worry about it.
That's fine. You can flip me off. I don't mind. I am an asshole. But I'm just going by memory here, but I remember things like, and again, it's all a blur now, but you know, the guys wearing the blue shirts and red shirts. And then you had like Paul Heyman, I think was a GM at one point. Then you had, who else was out there? Teddy Long for the longest time.
Oh, like I see what you did there.
And his black dick is long. What? And then you have, I don't know. I never got into that because, you know, as much of a fan of authority figures, if done right, I'm a fan of that. I don't believe the general manager has ever been done properly or even has a chance, because there's no chance for it to be done properly, because I don't personally like the brand thing to begin with. I really, that was part of the reason when, you know, I didn't watch wrestling as much when they split those brands and they brought the WCW title back to be, you know, and that's another discussion, but it's like, I was just saying, I didn't like the brand split. So therefore I'm probably not going to like any storylines that directly come out of the fact that we have two brands. Does that make sense? Like, you know, it's not that I mean, a general manager of organization, sure, why not? Should be as good of authority figure as anybody else. But, oh, you're just the general manager of one of the two TV shows? Yeah, that doesn't make sense at all.
See, and I think that speaks to a bigger problem, because what, you know, if you want to really do a brand split like that, like, you should have had guys on SmackDown, guys on Raw, and the interaction between the two should have been rare. Like, you know, it could have been, you know, and who knows how it would have turned out, because, I mean, we're just doing armchair booker here, but I think what co-opted the brand split was the fact that, you know, okay, you were drafted to Raw, you were drafted to SmackDown, but people would just show up on either show, you know, without any consequence and with, you know, no real explanation. There was no brand split. It was very, very artificial. And, you know, I personally feel that if they wanted to try and make that brand split meaningful, it should have truly been that. It should have been like, I mean, of course it's not going to be as big a deal when a guy went from WWF to WCW, but storyline wise, I think they could have endeavored to make it a lot more meaningful when somebody gets drafted from one show to the other. And I'm going to go off on one thing about the rant that, or about the draft that really bothered me. I think it was one of the most recent ones where they had, you know, talent from both shows on Raw one night, and they were drafting people back and forth throughout the show. And, you know, supposedly, you know, the big surprise, or, you know, the big shocker was that,
I know what you're going to say,
John Cena
goes to SmackDown.
He got drafted to SmackDown, but then, like, because of a match, Raw got, like, the final draft pick, and they drafted him back. It's like,
so stupid.
Like, so, I mean, every sports team in the world that doesn't get the first round draft pick just by waiting and then picking last is stupid.
Yeah, there's so many issues I have with the way, I don't know, the way Cena. I think we should have an episode just called Cena, because I could talk a lot about
that. That's just not a Cena problem. That was a friggin', like, writers are retards problem.
No, I'm not blaming Cena. I just mean an episode about issues that revolve around him, because there's a lot to talk about. But, you know, in that, you know what I mean? You're right. It's not his fault. It's the writers, obviously. But, you know, the fact that, I mean, even Cena quit one episode and he's like, oh, I'm going to spend time with my kids or my wife, my nephews, blah, blah, blah. He was back a week later because another big face got injured during that week. It's like, what the fuck, man? Like, there'll be a Cena. There has to be a Cena episode. Anyway, call it Thugonomics, whatever. But yeah, so the draft, I think the only way, and this will be the last I say on it, the draft, the only way I think it could have worked was if they actually, when WWF absorbed WCW and ECW in the same year, because it was all pretty much one year, if they kept all three as separate entities, everybody would know, yes, it's all owned by WWE. That's fine. But if they kept them as separate entities, whereas you are not the SmackDown champion, you are the WCW champion, it could have worked. It would have been perfect.
It would have had a better chance, that's for sure.
I think it would have, yeah, a better chance, you're right. Maybe a better chance, because right after that happened, WCW goes away, and all of a sudden SmackDown becomes minor leagues, right? I guess you can call it that. Even though The Rock was on SmackDown the whole time, it didn't matter. It was still the minor leagues, and it had the WCW belt almost as a way for Vince to be like, yeah, fuck off, my belt's still number one, you know.
Yeah,
no matter what.
I think that's what it boiled down to, because everything, I mean, guys like us will never know for sure, but I mean, everything that I've heard on podcasts from people that were there was that, you know, Vince McMahon is so intensely competitive that even when he owned those brands, he and those around him felt compelled to show that you know, the WWF brand was superior, even though, you know, you already won, like, you already owned everything.
Yeah. No question. And the weird thing with that is, when did U.S. and Intercontinental titles swap in importance, by the way? That's kind of a weird little thing there. U.S. title all of a sudden became like a big deal.
Did it, though?
Well, as in, it's on Raw, and it's the secondary title on Raw when it should theoretically be Intercontinental title. If you want to make SmackDown the new WCW, it should have stayed on there with the world title.
Maybe it's as hokey as, you know, it's on the USA Network.
Ah, you're reading a lot into it. I don't think anyone thinks that much, especially wrestling writers. But yeah, I mean, so then you have ECW, which became, you know, nothing. You're like, hey, Bob Holly's in ECW. I'm like, what? This fucking sucks. This is the worst. Big Show's in ECW. What? You know, so anyway, we're way off on this one. Going back to authority figures, though, can you think of any others, major ones we didn't really touch on?
I mean, the only one that I remember that was done well, and it was something new again, and I'm going to go back to ECW. It was kind of in their dying days, but when Don Callis was there as Cyrus the Virus, and he was the
representative. Yeah, or the Jackal.
Yeah.
Right? Is he the Jackal?
He was the network representative. I thought that was cool, because, I mean, that was kind of dovetailing off real life, because if you believe what was put out there, you know, Heyman was frustrated with because they were on what's now Spike, what was then TNN.
TNN. Yeah, that was a really good, you redeem yourself for being such an NWO mark. You've redeemed yourself in my eyes, because that's a great, not only reference, but also, I don't know, a great point to the idea of authority figures done in a different way than the boss that comes out. This was him as a commentator, or sometimes, you know, he'd come out and announce stuff, but I just got word from the network. And then you got Joey Styles like, what is he talking about? There is no corporate, you know, like, totally, you know, basically saying, what, he's crazy. There is no corporate. And I just got off the phone with corporate. What are you talking about? You
know? And that's what I liked about it, because he obviously had influence, but it was clearly delineated where it started and stopped. And I think that's for the authority figures that I don't like it's like, okay, because you've even had, in some cases, like, you know, you've had on the same show on WWF or WWE, you've had, you know, the commissioner and the chairman and the president and, you know, the janitor, the
general manager,
and the chief bottle washer and general manager. And
wait, chief bottle washer, is that somebody in the Rock's family, by the way?
Yes. And the you know, the notebook, and, you know, everything else, you know,
and Vince Russo,
yeah, like, just battling for power amongst themselves. It's like, that's weird to me. It's like,
well, like you had mentioned early on, what's the hierarchy, you know, like, who really calls the shots, and how watered down is the idea of an authority figure if there's 12 of them? You know, if how do you expect us to believe, you know, or suspend our disbelief of the fact that you are the boss and we're feuding with you because you're the boss? Oh, this guy's also a boss, though. I got a guy on my side who's a boss. Everybody's a boss. Like, no, you're you're not all like a boss. You have general managers, presidents, commissioners, son of chairman, you know, daughter of chairman, son-in-law, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm being too unduly hard on, you know, Vince McMahon and the WWF and their on-screen characters, because, you know, TNA Impact, I mean, they're just as bad. It's just as confusing. You know, you've got Dixie Carter, you've got Hogan, you've got Eric Bischoff, you've got all these people running around having some kind of authority, and then blended in there is kind of they've purloined the idea of the network having influence as well. And, you know, because there's so many players, it's just confusing. And so, you know, as a wrestling fan, it's like, okay, I don't even care when one of these people comes out and, you know, lays down an edict, because there's nothing within the story that they're telling that says that edict even means anything. Because at any moment, somebody else with a title could come out that I haven't seen in 4 months and completely contradict and undo what just happened.
Yeah, you just don't know. And I can't vouch for, you know, my TNA too much, but I can only imagine it's not very well done. But yeah, it's just very difficult to deal with it when it's done poorly. One thing I want to ask you with authority figures is, what about when they're former wrestlers? Like, when didn't they have Bret Hart as a GM one time, or, you know, William Regal, or, you know, it's What do you think about when they're wrestlers? Do you think that makes a difference at all?
Not really. I mean, I think as long as they're a good character, I mean, if it's somebody that had no personality to begin with, you know, whether or not they were a good wrestler or a bad wrestler, I mean, I think that's more important. I mean, if you're going to have somebody that's an authority figure in this day and age, I think it has to be somebody that's either compelling enough to carry a segment by themselves, or somebody like a Linda McMahon or a Jack Tunney that's infrequently used enough that when they appear, people are trained to know, okay, this is, you know, something meaningful is happening because the big boss is here. So to answer your question, I don't think it's particularly relevant in terms.
You probably think it's worse, actually. Right? Are you thinking it's more probably worse where it's, if you got Shawn Michaels or Mick Foley as the commissioner, it's even less. Do you think it's even worse than Shane McMahon or Vince?
No, I wouldn't say so. But I mean, the one thing that, one aspect that I haven't liked to Shawn Michaels or, you know, like, okay, even within, you know, the fiction of wrestling, if a former wrestler is going to take on the role of a commissioner, I think they have to, you know, kind of adjust their on-screen personality to be, you know, somebody that has that job. I mean, when Shawn Michaels comes out in his, you know, wife beater and cowboy hat and, you know, Jordache jeans and, you know, is dancing around at 50 or however old he is and refers to himself as the commissioner. I mean, it's like, okay, this guy is not sitting in the, you're telling me that this is the person that's sitting in the back and, you know, putting together the matches and things like that. Like that's what I don't buy.
Oh, wait, a guy can't dance now? You can't dance and be serious? Hey, man, it's the mullet. Business in the front, party in the back. You know, it's, you can have fun. You can come out in your Jordache jeans and call yourself the Heartbreak Kid when you're 56 years old. You know?
He's just a sexy boy.
How many times have you jerked off to Shawn Michaels, real quick?
Today?
All right. That's a good one to end on. Talk about shoot radio. What?
So it doesn't sound like we achieved any kind of consensus, but
no, but we were able to reference a lot of authority figures that have been in, you know, the big promotions over the years and kind of the impact they had. And I think there is some consensus about how, you know, Vince and Austin was probably the biggest and most well-known, and whether, you know, someone liked it or not. Yeah, that's obviously opinion, but, you know, it was probably the most major feud with an authority figure that I think in any era going forward, everything's going to like go back to that. Like, oh, well, remember when, you know, Teddy Long, if he ever becomes anything, you know, major, Teddy Long feuded with,
that will be interesting. If somebody, remember when Teddy Long
did anything, right, you know what? Teddy Long's best days were as a ref. I'll say it. He did a great job as a ref.
He had, and again, I don't want to bang the WCW drum too much, but he was he managed Doom, the team of Ron Simmons and Butch Reed, to good effect. He was a good manager. He had his moments. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll take your word for that one. Yeah. So I mean, you know, I think everything's going to go back to Austin McMahon as far as when people compare authority figure feuds in the future, because they know it was a big one. And whether you like it or not, like I said, I thought it was done well. I was a big fan of Vince in that role, but I got sick of Austin. Just like, you know, Chris, you probably was the opposite way. You were probably thinking, all right, Vince, that's enough. Why don't you just either be the boss or be on screen? Don't try to be both, you know? And
I have to be honest, though, like at the time, as it was happening, I really enjoyed it as it was happening because it was entertaining television.
Okay. And you can't ask for more than that, right?
No, at the end of the day, I mean, that's what it's all about, right? I mean, it's supposed to be something that you don't takes you away from the baloney of your everyday life.
Speaking of baloney of everyday life, John Laurinaitis, authority figure. Anyway, we'll close on that. Johnny Ace as the authority figure.
Baloney. The man from Japan.
He sucks. Oh, man. He's got an actual baby face. For a guy who's complete not a baby face, he's got an actual baby face.
He does.
He's cute.
You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.